Thanks for joining us today for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. You know, we always get a lot of questions about pruning. So today we have one of our experts back to help you out with that and a whole lot more. Laura Gelbeck with us. She's an associate professor and extension specialist in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. She's an expert on woody ornamentals. She knows a lot about nursery management and landscape installation and, of course, maintenance and tree care. So maybe you're wondering if you can still prune, or maybe you're wondering if you can still plant, or maybe you have other woody ornamental plant questions that you might want to ask Laura about. I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Laura Gell, good to have you back. Thanks for joining today.
Hi, Larry. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great, and I hope you are as well. Pruning comes to mind right away for me, and as we think about it, I mean, is it getting too late maybe for some species or not?
No. Actually, this is a great time to prune your trees and shrubs. They haven't leafed out yet. You can see what you're doing. A lot of the insects and diseases are not quite active yet. It's a great time. And if you're going to be pruning, I would make sure you have the right tools and able to work hard.
Yes, indeed. Able to work hard. And shrubs as well. Trees and shrubs, I guess, huh?
Yeah. The only thing is, if you are pruning shrubs that are going to flower in spring, you are removing some of the flower buds.
Yeah.
That's the only downfall. However, I like to prune right now because I can see the architecture of the shrub, and I know, I can guide my pruning cuts accordingly. But if you don't want to sacrifice flowers in the spring, you can prune after it flowers. But I would do it soon after, because sometime in the summer, they start to set their flower buds for next year.
Makes good sense. Anne in Harmony, Minnesota has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Anne.
Hi there. So nice to be near there. I have a dwarf weeping crab apple. There's so many adjectives. I often get it wrong, but I missed pruning this year. And I'm just wondering what would happen if I did some of it now.
Like I said, this is a great time to prune. You're in Minnesota, so nothing has leafed out yet. You can prune right now. Just be aware you are removing some flower buds.
Yeah. So get those pruning shears out, Anne. I would, we got the weekend coming up. It's probably a good time to get that all done.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, Carol in Manitowoc has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Carol.
Good afternoon. I have a question. My husband had come home and said that he had heard that there's some sort of bug or disease that is starting to affect the white spruce trees. I'm wondering if that's valid or invalid right now.
Well, the white spruce, our native white spruce, can get a number of insects and diseases, and there's nothing new, really. One of the most common diseases that spruce can get, actually, there's two of them. There's Cytospora canker, and then, of course, Rhizosphera needle cast, which causes the needles to drop. And it's so common. I see it all over the place. At the Arboretum, we have a number of white spruce that just about you want to cut down because there's very few needles left. And it's a disease that's around. There's not much you can do about it except, there's a fact sheet on Brian Huddleston's plant disease clinic at UW-Madison on various spruce diseases that you can download for free. I don't have his address of his website in front of me, but those are good places to go to. But it's not a new disease. They've had it for quite some time.
Yeah. And if you just type into your search engine, UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, I think it's PDDC at UW, well, just type in Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and Jeff's looking it up, and we'll have the exact for you. But I think that's really good advice from Laura. Carol, thank you for calling. Betty in Ashland, we'll go to you. Hi, Betty.
Hello there.
What's on your mind?
I want to know if we're too late to trim up our apple trees up here near Ashland. We've got a lot of water spouts and, you know, crossing branches still.
Yeah, no, that was a great time, just especially with water sprouts, because they don't produce any flower buds. They're just vegetative. And so I would get rid of those, any suckers at the base of the tree. And then if you do need to prune scaffold branches, just realize that you are sacrificing some of the flower buds, which means less fruit. But with the suckers and the water sprouts, they don't produce flowers or fruit.
Yeah, and so when you've got branches that are kind of overlapping in a way,
yeah,
Laura,
crossing branches.
Yeah, where do you take those off? You take them off right at the tree, don't you?
Yeah, well, what you do, I actually have three fact sheets on the Wisconsin Horticulture Division of Extension website, and one is on pruning shrubs, another is on pruning trees, and the last one is on pruning evergreens. And they're two-page simple fact sheets that show you where to prune. When you're pruning larger limbs or any limbs off of a tree, you want to make sure not to cut it flush. You don't want flush cuts, meaning right against the trunk.
Right.
You want to protect the branch collar at all costs. And it's easier for you to look at the picture online than it is for me to describe it. But you do three different cuts. First is a bottom cut outside of that, you know, about 6 inches away from the trunk. The second cut is outside of that first cut, going from the top down instead of the bottom up like the first cut. And then the limb will fall off. Then you'll have a longer stub. You're not done yet. Then you're going to want to remove that stub. But again, you're not cutting it flush. You want to protect the branch collar. There's a number of reasons why.
Well,
like I said, you can go to the fact sheet and see it, the diagram.
What's the main reason why you protect that collar?
Well, there's a number of reasons, Larry, because if you're cutting that branch back flush to the trunk, you're actually cutting into trunk tissue, not just branch tissue. And that invites pathogens that could technically invade the trunk and cause cankers and a number of issues. The other reason why is, plus the cut would be a larger diameter cut than if you were just to remove the branch. Other reasons, protecting that branch collar is to allow for quicker wound closure. You're not cutting into the trunk tissue, the branch tissue that's left very little. You're not leaving stubs, but you're not cutting it flush. That will eventually form callus, and the callus tissue eventually will close that wound.
You know, that was a great description, and I was thinking as you were talking, you know, we usually talk about cutting it at the collar, but we rarely do we talk about, well, why do we? What's the difference? So it was a great answer to that. Thank you so much for that. John in Mount Horeb, your turn now. Hi, John.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about emerald ash borer. We have two high-value trees in our yard. They're ash trees, obviously, and they probably have trunk diameters of, I would say, 18 or 20 inches. We have been routinely treating them every other year for many years now. We've had a professional come in and do the injections of, I think it's triage, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So, but as the trees get bigger, it's getting a little more expensive to have these treatments. My question is, I've read about some granules of something, I don't know what, that can be sprinkled around the base of the trees that also would be effective against the emerald ash borers. Are those granules as effective? And if so, is there a particular ingredient that I should look for when buying those?
They're not as effective, and I don't recommend them because your trees are so large. I would get them professionally injected with the triage. And the triage is injected in, for those who don't know, is injected in the root flare going around the trunk of the tree. It's taken up by the tree, and it's inside the tree. It's not like a pesticide spray. It's inside the tree. Ash are wind pollinated, so insects generally don't, you know, aren't on the ash trees. And it's done typically right about now. I've had it done every other year too on my ash tree. It's worth the cost, considering if those trees die, the cost of removal of the trees, you lose the shade, and you have to replant, and it will be decades before you have anything that's that large to shade your home. It's worth the investment.
And I'm sure the cost varies from one area to another. What in general terms? Well, John, how much are you being quoted for it at your place in Mount Horeb?
I think we're being quoted about $300 per tree of these larger trees.
Okay.
Yeah, it's because you have a large tree. And anytime they get larger, the price goes up. That's why, because the chemical that is used is quite expensive.
And you obviously need more of it for a larger tree.
Yep.
So yep. $600, is it every other year or is it every year?
Every other year.
All right, so then you're thinking $300 a year.
It's worth it.
Yeah, so over the, 10 years, you got a little money invested, but in about 10 years, that's what it would cost you to cut the darn thing down, too.
Oh, yeah.
$3,000 or so. And then, and I have experience with that, financial experience with that, with a very large one in my back lawn. And sometimes it's expensive because there's the people that are doing it are working in a small area, and it takes a bit of time to get those trees down. So I would rather be injecting and thinking, okay, I'm spending $300 a year per tree. But there you go. John, there you go. If I was you, I'd keep injecting. Carol in Sparta, we'll get to you in just a minute. A reminder, our guest today, Laura Jull, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the College of Ag and Life Sciences. She knows a whole lot about pruning and woody ornamentals and nursery management and maintenance and tree care, our guest. And you can join in. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Thanks for joining us here on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and great to have you with us as we talk pruning and planting trees and shrubs and a whole lot more with our guest Laura Jull from the UW-Madison College of Ag and Life Sciences. She's an extension specialist as well. Always great to have her come by. And the number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Carol in Sparta, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for joining in.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Afternoon. Appreciate the call.
I have a question. I want to plant a new tree, spruce tree this year, replace one that I had to have removed. And I've kind of found one in someone's yard. It's a soft needle spruce. But I don't know what type it is or where you can purchase it, or I just need help with that, I think.
Okay. There's a couple questions I have. If it's soft needle spruce, it's probably not a spruce. is probably a fir tree, and firs look very similar to spruce. There's an easy way to tell it apart. If you take a needle and very gently pull it off, if there is like a little peg still attached to the needle, it's probably a spruce. And if the needles come off and there's no little woody peg attached, then it could be a fir. But there's other ways to tell it apart. With fir trees, you're not going to have any cones on the ground because the cones disintegrate on the plant and they never fall as a complete unit. Whereas spruce trees, you'll have lots of cones on the ground and up in the tree. Regarding the question was what to replace it with. If you had a spruce, did it die from diseases?
Yeah.
Yeah, then I would not plant another spruce because they're all susceptible to the diseases that spruce get, to be very honest. I would plant something different. There's lots of different evergreens you could plant. It depends a lot on your soil. Have you had a soil test done?
I haven't. It's heavy clay soil.
Okay, then you're not going to want to plant a fir either. You're better off planting, you know, something like an arborvitae that can tolerate a little bit more clay. Junipers, as long as it's well-drained soil, you can plant junipers. There's a number of them. They come in all different shapes and sizes and colors. The best bet is to go to your local garden center or nursery that is open for retail business and take a look at what they have. There's lots of different choices out there.
Yeah, and it brings to mind another question just relating to purchasing trees, and that's can you buy them bare root at this time of the year, or are they all in pots, or what?
Typically with evergreens, they're not bare root. There are some available. I don't know if they still do this, but the DNR had little seedlings that were available bare root, but you got to get them in the ground soon because once they start to break bud, they should not be bare root. And that's for little plants like a foot tall.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're available bald and burlapped or in containers. Regardless of the method of production, you need to make sure that root flare is at the soil line. So if you get it in a pot, the root flare is often buried in the pot and you need to scrape the top of the pot, the soil off until you start seeing that flare coming out. You also, with containerized plant material, the roots often grow around and around and around. And those roots actually have to be very carefully stretched out like spokes of a bike. You don't want those roots to continue to spiral around in the potting hole. You need to spread those roots out. And then, of course, same with bald and burlap, though. You're not going to have the spiraling roots. The most important thing with bald and burlap trees is, of course, getting that root flare right at the soil line, remove the basket, peel back the burlap, or get rid of it altogether. It's very important you do this.
Yeah, and I guess if it probably doesn't hurt to have it fairly wet.
Yes, you want the root ball, whether it's container or bald and burlap, you want it moist. You don't want a dry ball or a dry pot.
I'd soak it in and let it sit for a bit, and so that the roots themselves then become a little more flexible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carol, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Patrick and Madison, your turn. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Great. So I planted, 70 or so arborvitae trees back 30 years ago. They've gotten so tall, I'd like to cut them back maybe 20, 30%. And I'm not sure if that's going to kill the tree or if it's okay to do.
So you're thinking about cutting the top off?
Yeah, substantially, like maybe 20 or 30% of the height.
Okay.
Okay. At one time of pruning, you don't want to remove more than 20% 20-25% of a plant's canopy in terms of trees. Shrubs, it's a little different. But with trees, you don't want to remove that much. That's a lot. 30% is an awful lot. You might send that plant into shock. But you can bring some of the taller branches down to a lower branch. You wouldn't just randomly cut them straight across because that would look goofy, and it just wouldn't be the most aesthetic way. So I would take some of the larger branches, do it over the course of a year, take some of the larger branches back down to a node or where another branch is coming off. Try to hide your pruning cuts. Always prune back to a lateral branch. Do not do random internode cuts. That's not good. But, you know, it might be time to replace it with something else. You could cut them all down and replant. That gets expensive and timely. But you don't want to do super drastic cuts straight across. You want to do it judiciously and over time.
So maybe do some this year and then finish it right off next year.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense to me as well. Patrick, there you go. Thank you for calling. Mark in Kakana, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Yes, I have a couple of nice ash trees in my yard, about two-thirds grown. And last year they came down with emerald ash borer, so I had them professionally treated. And then when I started looking closer at the trees, there's branches, just a few on each tree, where you can see that they've been gnawed on. And I'm wanting to know, they're not, the branches aren't dead, but they look pretty rough. And I'm wondering if I should cut those branches off. And if I do, how do I dispose of the branches properly?
Okay, well, you kind of went out there for a second. What is gnawing on the branches?
Emerald ash borer.
Okay, I didn't know if there was an animal in there, too. Well, when you say gnawing on the branches, are you seeing those D-shaped exit holes, or are you seeing actual chewing of the branches?
I'm seeing exit holes on the branches.
Okay, that makes more sense. You can prune those branches out if you need. You know, some ashes will have the exit holes, but the insects inside the tree may be already dead. So I would do the scratch test with your fingernail on the young twigs and see if it's green underneath. If it is green underneath, those branches are still alive, and they don't necessarily need to be cut. I just had my ash tree pruned, and now is a great time. Before, you know, it gets too hot out and you can see what you're doing. Realize if your tree has been treated, was it this year?
Last fall.
Okay. You're going to wait another year before you would have to treat it again. It's an every other year application. It's not a one and done. There's plenty of emerald ash borer around town. And if you don't treat your trees, unfortunately, and I'm not a big pesticide person, but if you don't treat your trees, the emerald ash borer will find them, believe me. And it's good to have your tree protected ahead of time. Now, regarding the removal of the branches, I set mine out at the curb because the city is coming to chip the take away the branches. But I would make sure to keep it away from, you know, basically any other ash tree potentially. But yeah, I don't know if you have city brush pickup, but if you do, I would put it out at the curb and have them take it.
Okay. Mark, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too. Number's 800-642-1234. Let's go to Mike in Manakwa next. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I wanted to plant a couple of serviceberry shrubs or small tree, and I have a sandy soil, and I wanted to know if I have to wait until the nighttime temperatures are above freezing to do that.
I would wait probably a couple. I don't. Where are you?
Manakwa.
Manakwa. Oh, way up there. Yep. Yeah, I'd probably plant them early May It's a good time to get them into the ground up there. Kudos to you for planting a wonderful tree. Service berries are great plants, and they provide fruit for the birds as well as me. They're very edible and delicious.
Mike, there you go. Hang on. Wait a little while. First part of May, maybe. You can join in again, 800-642-1234. Alice would like to know how and when to, and this is an email, how and when to trim lilac bushes. Hers are very old and woody.
That's a great question. Again, I would refer people to the fact sheet I have on the UW Division of Extension horticulture website, and they will be putting these up on, I think, your website after the show. They're wonderful. I don't want to say wonderful because I'm the author. That sounds arrogant. But they're good resources, and it shows you exactly how to prune. For large lilacs, I would do selective thinning cuts where you're taking the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant, and you would leave the younger, thinner branches behind that are coming from the ground. And you would do this over the course of several years. So just do about a third of them now. The next year, you do another third, and so on. You are removing flower buds, but as those lilac branches get really large in diameter, they become more susceptible to lilac borers, as well as the flowers production goes down. And the flowers will be so high up that you can't enjoy them. You can't see them or smell them. And I love the smell of lilac. So doing thinning pruning, about a third of the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant every couple of years so that young sucker growth will come back. And that young sucker growth that comes back will produce flowers that you can see and smell.
It is amazing, the difference. I had a lilac on one of my other homes and did that, and it's just absolutely amazing how those flower buds come out the next year. I loved it a lot. Judith emailed to ask when you can prune or split lavender.
I'm not sure what she means by split. You mean division?
Divide, I think, is what.
Okay, division. Division you can do very soon. This is the time of year to divide your perennials. Wait till the ground, obviously, is not frozen, which around here in Madison is not frozen anymore. And it's a great time to divide your plants, especially, you know, the month of April, before growth initiates. And then the other question was pruning of your lavender. Lavender, you know, I've been trying to grow it in my yard for years, and it's often winter killed. A lot of the cultivars that are available are not cold hardy, even though the tag will say zone 5. It's like, no. You want to wait to prune your lavender until probably spring. After it leaves out, remove any of the dead material. I experimented with this. I cut mine all the way back in spring, and nothing came back. So I waited until the growth initiated, if it did at all, and then remove any of the dead branches.
I want to go back, before we go back to the phones, I wanted to go back to an email because it has to do with lilacs, because the caller was wondering if you can dig up lilac suckers and replant them.
Yes, you can, as long as you get the roots, as many of the roots as possible, and you're not damaging the mother tree or shrub.
Barbara in La Crosse, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, guys. My question was back to those service berries. I got a service berry as well, or I'm getting it in 2 days, and I'm curious, I'm doing it in clay soil. Do I need to wait till May? Because they said I could plant it now.
Where are you located?
La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Okay, La Crosse. It's farther up north. The thing is, you want to get the plants in the ground before they leaf out, if at all possible. Once they start to bud out, I would wait a little bit and then you can plant them. But as long as, actually, if they're already dug, you can plant them regardless. If you're transplanting them from one place to your yard to another, I would do it now before it leaves out. Clay soils, you know, heavy clay soil is not great for service berry. They like a little bit more loamy type of soil. You never want to amend the hole with any soil. That actually is not a good thing. You would probably want to dig a very large hole or planting area and then kind of scuff up the sides. If it's solid clay, I'm sorry to say, but service berry will not do well in clay.
Hmm. Barb, does that help out?
Well, this is a garden bed that's been there for years with some. So I'm thinking the soil's already been amended. So
okay, that's different. Yeah, I thought you were planting like a street tree that, you know, a lot of these, the soil gets worse the closer you get to the street. And, you know, when you dig the hole, if it's like a solid glaze of clay, yeah, service berry won't like that. But in a garden bed, yeah, you can plant. There's various types of service berry you can plant. There are large, most of them are small trees. They're not little shrubs. So you got to make sure you give it enough room to plant. And I would, yeah, you can plant. I personally wait until the ground is a little bit warmer. The soil temperature is a little bit warmer, probably about end of April.
Barb's in La Crosse, so
yeah, it might still be too good. Get a soil thermometer and measure the temperature of the soil.
Yeah, what is it? What should it be?
Oh, good question.
50.
Yeah, I'd say about 50 or warmer. And also remember, we're not done with snow yet. I don't. I've had 7 inches of snow in my yard on April 18th. So, and I live in near Madison. So,
yeah, Barbara, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Bill in Oregon, we'll go to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I got a common problem, but I'm looking for a shrub a shade tolerant shrub that I can use as a deer barrier, or you know, a small tree or a shrub. I'm trying to block a space that's about 4 or 5 feet wide, and I'm just I'm trying to think of a plant that I could put there that they won't eat, but also gets big enough that at least it makes it difficult to pass, in a sense.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. They eat so many things. Arborvitae being their favorite snack. I'm referring to my extension pub, but I do have an extension pub on plants that are not favored by deer or deer resistant. And I don't want to say resistant because if deer are hungry enough, they'll eat anything. And that publication's on the Wisconsin Horticulture Extension Horticulture website. I think it's still up. I hope it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, various shrubs you can use and that are shade tolerant, that runs less on the list that you can use. You know, they'll eat hydrangeas. That's a shade tolerant plant, but they'll eat it. How tall are you looking for it to be?
Hopefully like 3 to 4 feet, possibly.
Yeah.
I can tolerate it getting a little taller than that, but.
Yeah. What's your soil type?
It's pretty mesic. We're kind of a glacial dump.
Okay. I'm trying to rack my brain off the top of my head. I can think of a lot of different shrubs that tolerate shade, but are they truly deer resistant? I'm getting older and my brain doesn't work as well anymore, so I would refer to that publication. I don't want to recommend a shade-tolerant shrub that the deer like, but like I said, that a publication is available out there to look, because all the shrubs I'm thinking of off the top of my head, the deer like, that are shade-tolerant.
So UW Extension Horticulture UW Extension Horticulture website, UW Madison Extension Horticulture website will get you there, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Laura Jolla, our guest today, associate professor and extension specialist in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. And we're talking trees and shrubs with her. We've talked pruning. We've talked about care a bit. You have a question. I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Great to have you with us for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Laura Jell. We're talking a lot about trees and shrubs today and pruning. She can certainly talk about native tree selection and other topics as well. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. And let's go to Susan in Coon Valley next. Hi, Susan.
Hi there. I have a question about yew plants. We made a mistake, I think, when we first moved on our farm setting to plant these yew plants near the house. And I trim them back every year, but my God, they've just taken over. I mean, they got such a horrific root system. How do you get rid of these, or what do you do with them? I mean, they're beautiful when they're growing and you know, when they're big, but they take over everything.
Yeah.
So these are yews you're trying to get rid of?
Yes.
The only way to really get rid of them is to dig them up, dig up the root system and the plants and haul them away. That's really the best way to get rid of them. You could reduce the size if you want to keep some evergreen there. You can prune back larger branches back to where they meet another branch, again, protecting that branch collar. That would be what I would suggest. Bring down the height of it if it's getting too tall. Yews are very forgiving.
And if you want to get rid of them entirely, a little chainsaw at the base or thereabouts?
Yeah, I would recommend that. And again, if you don't want to dig them up, you can spray a herbicide directly after you cut the stems back. But I'm not a big fan of that. That's just me personally. But that can be done.
Susan, there you go. Thank you so much. Summer emailed to ask how to protect her 3-year-old heirloom apple tree. This winter, it's been faced with something eating it. She doesn't know if it's squirrels or chipmunks or whatever, rodent.
Is it at the base of the tree or is it in the branches?
It doesn't. She doesn't say. So,
if it's on the branches, it's probably deer. If it's at the base of the tree, like around the trunk, it's probably voles that chew on the bark and can girdle the tree. Yeah, and the best way to protect your trees is installing some type of fencing around the tree before winter, actually in late fall, and you would put it around the diameter of the tree. That would help keep perhaps the deer off, though. The deer can get on their back legs, and they can eat things that are 6-8 feet tall if they want to. To protect the base of the tree from voles or other critters from chewing on the bark, that would, first of all, make sure the bark mulch is not touching the trunk of the tree. It should never touch the trunk of the tree, because that provides a nice home for over winter for voles. You also want, whatever you use, you want to put it around the base of the tree far enough down that the voles can't dig underneath it. And that's hard to do, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes, you know, I'm not a big fan of the white corkscrew type tree protectors. People forget them and they leave them on too long, and they can actually girdle the trunk and cause the trunk to be misformed. I would use something that goes around the trunk down to the ground to help protect it. And it's not fail-safe, but it could perhaps reduce some injury.
Let's take a call from Charlie in Richfield, Minnesota next. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, good morning. Say, last year I planted, last spring, a small spruce tree about 2 feet tall, white spruce, and it was wet spring, so we had plenty of water. Then we had a dry spell over the summer, and it got drier, but I kept watering it a little bit. And in the fall, I gave it a lot of water, and it was very green all winter. And about a month ago, some of the needles, especially at the tip, started to fall off. And now I bet over half the needles have fallen off. And I just wondered if there's no insects active right now, so just wondered what that could be.
It could be a root issue. I would, you know, at this point, I don't know if this plant will survive. It might be a disease pathogen in the soil that has attacked your tree, a root rot, crown rot. There's many things that could be wrong with it. I would give Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic a call or, email him and see what he recommends. There is a way. I mean, you can dig up the whole plant, but then you don't have the plant anymore and send it to him. But I'm curious, is your soil well-drained?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not puddling water at all?
No. Not right now, no. Mm-mm.
Okay, because, it's probably some root disease. If the needles are falling off, yeah, that's the first thing I suspect.
Charlie, so Brian Huddleston at the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic is the guy to contact. I think it's pddc.wi.uw.edu. EX, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure off the top of my head, but just Google.
I think it's .edu, pddc.wi.edu.
Yeah.
There you go. Drake in Green Bay emailed. He has about a 30-foot Japanese yew looking kind of sickly. And he, as an aside, says, like a lot of them this time of the year. Only his has looked that way since beginning last spring and summer. The needles seem more sparse and yellowing. Can mm-hmm. he fertilize the roots with watering spike and expect any success?
No, I don't recommend that. Your plant is in stress, and fertilizing it right now is not something I recommend. Fertilizer is not a cure-all. And it sounds like you've got some potential root issue going on. If it's really sparse, and yews are really sensitive to poor drainage. If it's by a downspout from a house, or if it's an area subject to flooding, or even puddling of water, yews do not like that at all, and you'll get thinning of the canopy. 30-foot yew is a large yew. So perhaps, again, send samples of infected branches to Brian at the disease clinic and see what he has to say. But, you're going to have a lot of yews this time of year are starting to show winter burn. If it's on one side of the plant, then it's typically winter burn. Yews are very forgiving. You can prune them back and they will produce new leaves. You don't have that with junipers. So I would go that route.
Babs in Sparta emailed to ask if you can't plant the tree yet, where do you store it? Garage during evenings and outside during the day?
Yeah. In fact, my garage has some potted woody plants in it that I didn't get in the ground last year, and they're still fine. The only problem is they're starting to break bud, and if I put them outside, and of course we're going to get frost, that would zap that new growth. So, I'm going to be putting them outside here soon so that they get some sunlight. But if the temperatures go below, freezing, then they have to come back into the garage because you don't want the root ball freezing.
Varieties have you been impressed with lately, tree varieties? And then maybe talk about shrub varieties that you've been impressed with.
Oh, I am impressed with everything, Larry. When it comes to plants, herbaceous, woody, it doesn't matter. Mother Nature provides us with such wonderful plants. I really like viburnums. That's one of my favorite group of plants. Unfortunately, like anything else, we have insects that are attacking viburnums, the viburnum leaf beetle and viburnum borers. I'm still a huge fan of Carlesii, the Korean spice viburnum. And there's a number of varieties out there or cultivars out there to choose from. I like Spice Island quite a bit. It's here bred in Wisconsin. And Spice Island and I'm trying to think of the other one. I got two different cultures in my yard, but they're really nice plants. And the flowers occur about the first week of May, and they are incredibly fragrant, and they smell so nice. I used to recommend Arrowwood viburnum, but viburnum leaf beetle is pretty much ruled that out. They eat the leaves. Other trees that I really like, I'm a huge fan of chinquapin oak or any oaks, particularly chinquapin. It's native to Wisconsin. It tolerates higher pH quite well. I also like white oaks, but got to watch the soil pH on that. You know, sometimes everybody's in a rush to get the latest and greatest plants on the market, and I'm not always impressed with all the new stuff that's coming out. Sometimes the old standbys are great landscape plants. I can think of, you know, I'm really a big fan of plants that attract pollinators, and we need to be planting those kinds. And it can be native or non-native. There's been research that's done out of, I think it's the University of Kentucky, that show there's plenty of non-native plants that attract pollinators just fine. And I'm a big fan of our native St. John's wort, Hypericum Calmianum. That is a plant that is a bee magnet, a herbaceous perennial that also attracts a lot of pollinators, is not native, but I can't even count the number of pollinators on it. And that is the lesser calamint. It's not a mint, it's a calamint. It was in the genus Calamintha. It's now changed, but a lot of labels haven't made the change. But as for Montrose White is the cultivar, and I have two of them in my front yard. And from the months of late June all the way until frost, that thing is always in flower, and it has hundreds of pollinators, bees, wasps, not the nasty wasps, but the wasps, they're more interested in the pollen than you. And that's a great plant.
Give the name of that again.
Okay, it's Calamintha.
Calamintha.
Calamintha. And it's also known as lesser calamint. The cultivar that I particularly like is called Montrose, Montrose White. And that's a superb plant.
And you're recommending that you could, if you want to prune right now on trees, pretty much any tree, you can still do it, and probably a good time to do it is right now.
Yep.
Okay.
However, one thing I want to quickly say, if it's an oak, it's too late.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Don't do oaks. Right.
Or even elm and oaks. They need to be in the dormant season. Do not prune them. It's past April 1st. And it's getting warmer, hopefully.
Yeah.
I pruned my oak over a week ago, and that was at the tail end of when we could.
Can do it. On that happy note, Laura, thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
Laura Jahl, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the UW-Madison, our guest. Always fun to have her come by. Talking about improving your sleep habits on Monday, but a big thanks to for joining in today. Really appreciate it. Our show is a team effort. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod, technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer, Jill Nadeau, of course. I'm Larry Mueller, and hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.